Osho, Isan, no footprints in the blue sky. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
Beloved Book One. Once, to Kyozan, Isan commented, "All the Buddhas in the Samadhi enter into a speck of dust and turn the great wheel of the law." Kyozan said to him, "How about you?" Isan responded, "There is someone. Making him an example, we can get it from him." Kyozan pointed to a water bottle and said, "Please get in it." Isan's response was, "All the Buddhas, by their occult powers, are at present in the mouth of the bottle, turning the great wheel of the law. Can you see them doing it?" Kyozan then said, "This is the turning of all of the Buddhas. How will you turn it?" Isan observed, "It cannot be done if we are separated from the thing itself," at which Kyozan made his bows.
Manisa. Before I discuss the sutras, something of great importance has to be understood. Zen is neither Buddhism nor Taoism. It is a crossbreed. When the great Bodhidharma met the masters of Taoism in China, the meeting and their dialogues created something new, which has the flavor of Buddhism in it, but is not dependent on Buddhist literature. It has also the flavor of Tao in it, but is not dependent on Taoist tradition. It is independent of both the parents. As all crossbreeds are better than the parents, even philosophical systems, theological ways, meditation function in the same way as fruits, as animals, as human beings. The crossbreed by nature itself takes the best of both the parents and leaves all that is non-essential. Zen's greatness and the height is because it has left all the non-essentials of Buddhism and all the non-essentials of Taoism, and two great peaks have merged into a higher peak, which has only the flavor from both. But the synthesis of the flavor makes it a totally new phenomenon. Hence, the traditional Buddhist will not give any credit to Zen. He will simply laugh and will say it is just crazy. The traditional Taoist also will say the same thing, that it is crazy. It is not part of our system. But this became a great opportunity to rebel against all traditions. Zen is pure rebellion. But unfortunately, the way history moves, even the very rebellious people, Gautam Buddha himself, was a great rebellious mind. He rebelled against Hinduism, he rebelled against Jainism, he rebelled against the whole past of India. He has the guts and the genius to do it. But this is the unfortunate part, that sooner or later Buddha will have to die. His words will fall into the hands of the scholars. He cannot prevent it. Although his last premonition was this, that don't make me an institution. Don't make me a tradition. I have been against the traditional way. I don't want to become myself a tradition. But I will not be here to prevent you. So my last words are, don't make my statues, don't make my temples, don't write my scriptures, so that I can disappear just like the bird's footprints in the blue sky. Don't be worried that my disappearance will be in any way a disturbance in the evolution of humanity. Better Buddhas will be coming. Greater revolutionaries will be coming. I don't want to stand in their way. But nobody listens. The moment he died, the second thing his disciples did was collecting all that he has said in 42 years continuously, morning, evening. And he had not allowed anybody to take notes for the simple reason that these notes will become scriptures. But the words were so profound that the first gathering, just the second day after Buddha's death, decided that all the enlightened disciples should gather together. And there were 500 enlightened disciples. This was called the first great meeting, and everybody should relate his experience so we can collect somehow the great treasure that is going to disappear if we don't collect it now. For the future generations, one can understand their concern. Buddha should not be lost. But one can also understand that although they are enlightened, they could not agree with Buddha's last statement, his last words. And they did not even feel that they are disagreeing. So each person who has heard whatever Buddha had said and whatever he has remembered, related, there were great troubles because somebody said something and somebody else contradicted it, that he said something else. Soon it was clear that they were all not agreeing. 32 schools arose. 32 different schools and traditions, each claiming to be the right tradition. And they started to make Buddha's statues, scriptures. In the whole world, more than Buddha, nobody else's statues exist. When the Arabians and Persians came into contact in Mongolia with the statue of Buddha, they had never seen anybody's statue. So Buddha's statue became to them exactly the word that symbolizes statue, but. But is a form of Buddha. They did not make any difference because there were no other statues. Only Buddha's statues. So Buddha became synonymous with the Buddha. Even today in Urdu, in Persian, in Arabic, Buddha means the statue. It is derived from Buddha, the man who has denied not to make his statues. Buddhism became a tradition. Again, somebody of the same genius and greatness has to revolt against the tradition. It was not a revolt against Buddha. It was a revolt against the traditionalism. Ritualism. The priest have come back with whom he has been fighting his whole life. The scholars have become again important. Bodhidharma rebelled against the Buddhist tradition. And part of his rebellion was meeting with the Tao and bringing all the flowers of Tao and create a new experience, but he was as unaware of the fact as Buddha was. Buddha was saying, don't make a tradition of me, but the tradition was made. Bodhidharma rebelled against the tradition, but was not aware that he will also will fall into the same trap of human mind. He became a tradition himself. Soon it was realized by Matasu that this is a sad story, that Bodhidharma, a man of fire, burning all scriptures, destroying all beliefs, Matasu was also of the same caliber, because to revolt is not easy. You need to have tremendous resources within you. Otherwise, you become futile. Your words don't have the traditional depth. Tradition gives a certain depth, a certain richness, a certain refinement. A single individual, if he stands against all tradition, needs to be of a great genius, of great creativity. Matasu rebelled against the traditionalism that has grown after Bodhidharma. And he introduced totally new ideas, new devices, hitting, shouting. Nobody has ever heard that you can wake up a man just by the shouting at the right moment. It was a great contribution to human consciousness. That hitting can become a reward in the hands of Matasu, Zen became again fresh as Buddha wanted it to be. After 1,000 years, Buddha would have loved Bodhidharma and Matasu, the people who rebelled. A rebellion, a rebellious spirit loves the very creativity that any rebel brings to any action, thought, meditation, art, music. But Matasu again, it has to be, it seems, a natural course that every rebellious person will also become a tradition. Isan also wanted to rebel against Matazu. It was not against Matazu, but the Matazu that the tradition has created. It is a strange phenomenon. Isan loved Matazu as he loved Buddha and Bodhidharma, but he could not accept the rituals that have grown afterwards when they had died. But Isan was not that great a genius. He could not be compared to Matazu or Bodhidharma. He was very polite. His politeness prevented his rebellion completely. You cannot be polite and revolutionary. You have to be iconoclast, and you have to hurt hard against the dead tradition. Politeness will make you respectable, but not revolutionary. And that is what happened. It is a misfortune. Isan became a respectable master. Because he became respectable, he lost the grandeur of a revolutionary. Whenever a person becomes respectable, he cannot say anything against the mass mind. The collective unconsciousness will feel hurt if he says anything revolutionary. And anything revolutionary will take away the respectability. He was very much respected, and he managed the respect. That's where he lost the beauty of rebellion. That shows in his sutras. They are not very great and very profound. They are good enough, but very lukewarm. Just because he wanted to rebel against the rituals that has grown behind Matazu, he left shouting, he left hitting, but he could not substitute anything else in their place. So he became in a way very poor. His humbleness was great. His simplicity was great, but he could not contribute anything new or profound to human consciousness. You have to remember it. Respectability and rebellion don't go together. If you want respectability, you have to conform to the society. And the society consists of blind people. Even though you have eyes, you have to walk like the blind. You have to keep your eyes closed. If you want the respectability from the blind, they can give respectability only to another blind, to a man who has eyes, does not belong to the mass. He seems to be a stranger. Isan could not gather the courage to be an stranger. Those who have lived a life of being a stranger come to know strange things which ordinarily you will not come across in life. Just the other day, I received a letter from a sannyasin who was present in a Jaina gathering which also had one night invited the great poets of the country. One of the greatest poets of contemporary India, Neeraj, was there. He has been here, so you all are acquainted with him. And he was hooted down, forced to leave the stage, and the reason was that he mentioned my name. He introduced himself before recital that all my poetry belongs to Bhagwan. He is my source of inspiration. Thousands of other writers and poets go on repeating what I am saying, but don't have the courage to make it clear to people from where their inspiration is. Sheer fear of the crowd. But Neeraj is a man of all the qualities of a lion. He said, it does not matter even if you shout, this hooliganism, this gundaism won't make any difference. He left the stage saying, long live Bhagwan. People are afraid to come here. You can see the reason. If somebody knows that they have been here, then they must be connected with me in some way or other. There are many people who want to be here, but does not have the guts to face the masses, even to come to hear me, needs courage. Nobody is asked to agree with me. They may disagree with me, but even for disagreement, they cannot come to listen to me. They read my books, hiding under covers of other books. Because if somebody knows that they are reading my books, their respectability is at risk. One of the chief ministers of Gujarat used to come here before he became chief minister. After becoming chief minister, he stopped coming. Not only he stopped coming, he told my secretary that you should not come to see me for any work in Gujarat, because I don't want anybody to know that I have been influenced by Bhagwan or any association with Bhagwan. Then he was defeated. Again he started coming here. When you are defeated, there is no need to fear. Already people are not in your favor. He came here few months before. I told my secretary that anyway I am not seeing anybody, and particularly I will not see this man who is such a coward that when he comes to power, he sends the message that it should be kept a secret that he has been following me, attending my camps. I don't like such cowardly sheepish human beings. He understood that that is right. Now he has become again the chief minister. I told one of my sannyasins there that asked him, does he want to see me? He said, just don't mention his name. At least till I am in power. To be rebellious, you have to live as a stranger amongst your own people. Isan has the possibility of becoming a rebel and then there would have been some profoundness in his statements, in his anecdotes, some new quality, some new dimension. Some new flowers may have blossomed, but because of respectability, he kept his rebellious spirit dormant. So once in a while something comes out, otherwise he is an example of a rebel who has repressed his rebellion. A small biographical note. Isan's foremost disciple was Kyozan, also known as Yangsan. You will be wondering why all these masters have two names. The reason is because of China and Japan. One name is Chinese and one name is Japanese. Between master and disciple, a new sect was established known as the Kuiyang School. He tried his best to rebel against Matazu. So between the master and disciple, between Isan and Kyozan, a new school was established. Its name was Kuiyang. It was characterized by the distinction made between the Zen of meditation based on the Lankavatara Sutra and instantaneous Zen. Which completely divorced itself from the Sutra. The Lankavatara Sutra is one of the most profoundest books in the world. It contains the very essentials of Buddha and hence it is respected and loved through all the Buddhist countries, China, Japan, Sri Lanka, Burma, Tibet. Taiwan, Korea, the whole Far East loves Lankavatara Sutra. It has tremendous beauty. It is not like other religious books. It has a great poetry in it. It is a creative work of art. This new sect that Isan and his foremost disciple Kyozan established was against the Lankavatara Sutra. It was a difficult task. I don't think Isan or Kyozan were capable of doing it. Of course, Matazu could have done it. They don't have that genius, but still what they did was good. Every rebellion is good, even if it is a small rebellion. The Lankavatara Sutra fundamentally preaches the gradual enlightenment, which seems to be more rational, practical, understandable, that step by step you move and discipline yourself. And when the time is ripe and you have come to the point where enlightenment is supposed to happen, it will happen, but it is not an instantaneous thing. It is not like instantaneous coffee. You have to prepare yourself to receive it, and that preparation can be of years, 20 years, 30 years may take. For you to become a vehicle for enlightenment, it was a logical system. Hence, Lankavatara Sutra has never been opposed. Even people like Matazu and Bodhidharma did not mention it. They simply avoided it. They did what they wanted to do, which goes against Lankavatara Sutra, but they did not mention it, because they also loved it. Its beauty is so profound that it will look almost going against yourself. So they did not mention it, they simply bypassed. Because their preaching was instantaneous Zen. They were opposing Lankavatara Sutra in the very foundations. But they were capable. Bodhidharma and Matazu, these two persons were certainly capable to bring a new insight, drop the idea of gradualness and bring the idea of instantaneous Zen. Its implications are great. The moment you drop the gradual Zen, all discipline becomes useless, all rituals become useless, all worshippings become useless. The only thing that remains significant is meditation. And to remain in the present as a witness. I agree with them rather than with Lankavatara Sutra. And that was the effort of Isan, but he was not of that great genius. to bring out something great and profound comparable to Lankavatar Sutra. So he was in a difficulty. The school that evolved through the work of Isan and Kyozan was an effort to formalize the anti-sutra position of Matazu. Matazu has an anti-sutra position. But Matazu has the quality to create something as a substitute, because you cannot take away from people's hands something that gives them consolation. You have to substitute it. Otherwise, your work is destructive, not constructive. And they both substituted. Bodhidharma has his own methods, not included in Lankavatar Sutra. Matazu went even further. The shoutings and the beatings, nobody has heard. His effort was so new that enlightenment is possible if the master hits you at the right moment or shouts at you at the right moment, that his very shout takes your consciousness to the deepest center of your being. What meditation does slowly, slowly, is good shouting of the master unexpectedly in a situation when the disciple was asking some question and the master jumps and shouts or hits him or throws him out of the door or jumps over him. These methods were never known. It was purely a very creative genius of Matazu, and he made many people enlightened. Sometimes it looks so hilarious. He threw a man from the window from a two-story house, and he had come to ask on what to meditate. And not only threw him, he jumped after him, fell over him, sitting on his chest, and he said, "Got it?" And the poor fellow said, "Yes." Because if you say no, he may beat you or do something else. It is enough. His body is fractured. And sitting on the chest, he says, "Got it?" And in fact, he got it. Because it was so sudden, out of the blue, he could have never conceived it. He has heard that Matazu hits people, Matazu shouts at people, but he has never heard that he throws them from a two-story building. He has multiple fractures. And then jumped over him, and sitting on his chest, at that moment, he was absolutely in such a shock that the mind stopped functioning. And that was the purpose of the whole thing. And because the mind stopped functioning, and Matazu was sitting on his chest, looking into his eyes, a great silence. The same blissfulness that comes out of meditation. But what a strange way. His anti-sutra attitude, he burned sutras. Buddhists have more scriptures than any religion, because 32 schools have their own scriptures, commentaries upon commentaries. It is a whole different world of literature. He burnt sutras. But he substituted something. Isan wanted to be another Matazu, but he has not the guts of that man. It is not easy to throw a man. And the man said, "What about my fractures?" He said, "Forget about the fractures. One day everybody has to die. You have died today. And there are only 7 days to choose. Nothing much of a choice. But you have got, that is the essential thing." In that utter shock, the man simply moved to his center. In shocks, that happens. Sometimes it has happened just accidentally. Your car turns over the road, rolls into a valley, takes few turns, obviously your mind will stop functioning. And if you understand Zen, that is a great opportunity, because you will be at the center. Death may occur, but if you know anything about Zen, it will not occur to you. It will occur only to your body, your consciousness will open its wings and flew to freedom. Zen has to be made available to every person in the world, because no one knows. Every day thousands of accidents happen, but because you don't know how to use the accident, you miss a great opportunity. You just get multi-fractures and few months in the hospital. A chance that could have made you a Buddha. I always think if Matazu was alive today, he may knowingly turn over a car on a cliff and send you rolling down, running after you, pulling you out from the wreckage and asking you the first question, got you? But Isan was not because he remained concerned about his respectability. Matazu dropped the idea of respectability. People like Matazu don't care a bit what the world thinks about them. The world thinks they are crazy. So what? They say we think that the world is crazy. We are all equal in that way. The world thinks we are crazy, we think the world is crazy. The decisive factor is that our craziness is blissful and ecstatic and intelligent, and their craziness is just retardedness, misery, suffering. So if both are crazy, then too you have to choose our craziness. Your craziness is simply suffering. A tragedy that you go on carrying from the grave to grave, from one death to another birth to another death. This is called the wheel of birth and death that will come in the sutras. The sutra. Once to Kyozan, Isan commented, all the Buddhas in the samadhi enter into a speck of dust and turn the great wheel of the La. It is a mythological wheel which goes on turning, and you go on clinging to some spoke of the wheel. Again and again the same thing happens, the birth, the marriage, the business, the misery, the death, again the birth. But who goes on moving this wheel? That is the question that Kyozan is asking. All the Buddhas in the samadhi enter into a speck of dust and turn the great wheel of the La. Kyozan said to him, how about you? That is where he shows his mildness, mellowness, humbleness. It is a mythological thing. No Buddha turns into a dust. And no Buddha turns the wheel. In fact, every Buddha is trying to get you out of the wheel. Every Buddha is functioning to take you out of this wheel of birth and death. You have died and born so many times, repetitively, and you have been doing the same things again and again. You don't get anything universal, immortal. You are just an actor in a drama. The curtain rises and the curtain falls, and it goes on and on. It is immensely good that you don't remember your past lives. Otherwise, you will go instantly crazy. Because you have done all these things so many times that you cannot believe that you are such an idiot. So ancient an idiot that you have been doing all these things for centuries, for many, many births, the same things, nothing has changed. You have not learned a single bit. Buddha's work is to help you get out of this vicious circle. So the question is not right in the first place, but Isan, being always humble and trying to be polite, will not say. If this question was asked to Matazu, he would have given such a good beating that the person would have never asked again any question. Because Matazu has declared again and again that it does not matter what you say. You will still get a hit. Don't think that I am hitting you because you are saying something wrong. I am hitting you because you are saying something, and I want you to reach to the place where nothing can be said. So whether you are saying right or wrong does not matter. It is just superficial. The hit is certain. And in what way it will come, it is spontaneous. Nobody knows whether he throws you or hits you on your chest with his leg. And he used to have a big staff. And he was really perhaps the rarest man in the world. He walked like a cow on four, and he looked like a tiger. His eyes were so fiery as any tiger's can be. And this behavior, walking like a cow whole life, he never walked like a man. It was below his dignity. And he was a very strong man. And everything you could expect from him, anything, one never knows what he is going to do. But still the man was lovable. If this question was asked to Matazu, multiple fractures are absolutely certain. Because the question is utterly baseless. But Kyozan was a humble person. I mean, Isan was a humble person. So when Kyozan asked him, "How about you? You are also a Buddha. Have you turned into a dust? And you help the rolling of the eternal wheel of Dharma?" Isan responded, "There is someone making him an example. We can't get it from him." He avoided the question, "How about you?" Because to say that, "Yes, I am also a Buddha," needs much more humbleness than Isan possessed. Because to declare yourself a Buddha is not a declaration of ego. Because egolessness is the essential part of Buddha. So the moment you say, "I am a Buddha," you are saying, "I am no more." It is only a different way of saying that you don't exist. Only a pure awareness, a witnessing. Kyozan pointed in a water bottle and said, "Please get in it. If you are a Buddha and you can become a dust, then this is the bottle. You enter into it." Isan's response was, "All the Buddhas by their occult powers are at present in the mouth of the bottle, turning the great wheel of the law. Can you see them doing it?" Now he is not being relevant. Rather than saying clearly that your question is absolutely absurd, rather than saying that, "Yes, I am a Buddha," but no Buddha turns the wheel. Every Buddha is trying to stop the wheel of life so that everybody can be immortal without any birth and without any death. So he goes on getting into more trouble just because he wants to remain humble, not to be like Bodhidharma, who told to the Emperor Wu of China that, "You are an absolute idiot," to anyone who would have cut his head. But looking at Bodhidharma, he could see that in comparison to him, "I am nothing more than an idiot." He is not being rude, he is simply being factual. That shows a great cultured mind of the emperor. But Isan has not that quality. So he goes on getting into more trouble. Kyozan brought a bottle and said, please get in it. It should be an example for you that whenever you are getting into any absurdity, stop in the beginning. The deeper you go, the more difficult it becomes to stop it. If you have taken one step into absurdity, you will have to take another step to be consistent with you and where it will lead. It is better from the very beginning to say that this is nonsense. But Kyozan was his chief disciple, and between the two of them they have created a new school of Zen. So naturally he could not be rude with Kyozan. He was his successor. He considered too much about the other person, and that is his fault. And that is the reason that in Japan the Zen people have ignored him completely. Nobody talks about Isan. It will give you an insight that you can have the respectability of the contemporaries, but nobody will remember you in the coming centuries. You will be forgotten completely like a name written on water. But those who are condemned by the contemporaries may be remembered for centuries to come. I am reminded of Socrates. The Chief Justice who pronounced the judgment of a death sentence to Socrates by giving him poisoning. That was the Greek way. He called Socrates close to himself. Socrates has been arguing for days in the court. Nobody was able to argue with him for the simple reason because he had no position of himself. He never proposed anything, any god that you can discuss, that you can argue against or for. He never proposed anything. So you were in a difficult position. Whatever you said, he could contradict it. He was a great genius as far as argumentation is concerned. So he contradicted everybody, finished everybody. The Chief Justice was impressed by him, but in Greece in those days there were only city-states and a very different kind of democracy. The whole city has the right to vote on any decision, and a decision about the life of Socrates was so important that the whole city gathered and against his will the chief justice could see that this man is innocent and this man is a glory to his land, but 51% people of Athens want him to be killed. Just it was a question of 2% people this way or that way. 49% people were in favor of Socrates to be released. But that is not the question. The percentage depended the decision. The Chief Justice decided, even though he wanted not to do such a thing, before telling to the masses who had gathered to listen to the judgment, he asked Socrates that personally I am not in favor of killing you, I would give you few alternatives. Of course I have to judge against you because 51% people of the city are against you. You can go out of Athens. There the law of Athens is no more applicable. You can be just on the boundary, so people can meet you there. Socrates refused. He said, I cannot go anywhere else. If Athens, which is in Greece the most cultured city, cannot allow me to live, who is going to allow me to live? There I will be more of a stranger. Here I have lived my whole life. I have not harmed anybody. Still 51% people are against me. They want me to be dead. Anywhere else, the same thing will happen. The judge has to agree that that's true. He said, the second alternative is you can stop teaching. You can take a vow of silence. Socrates said, that is impossible. So many people stumbling in darkness, and I know the way. And I can show them the way. No, I cannot remain silent seeing people stumbling in darkness and blindness. I will have to speak. The judge said, you are making things impossible for me. Then the only alternative is you have to be ready. By the evening you will be given poison. Socrates said, that is not much of a problem. One has to die one day. Perhaps my day has come. I am ready. Just I want you to remember that your name will be only remembered in reference to me. Otherwise, nobody will ever know that you existed. And it is true. Nobody would have known who was the Chief Justice if Socrates was not poisoned and killed. But Socrates certainly is going to remain in the memories of men as long as human beings are here on this planet. Isan is forgotten purposely, because he considered more the public opinion and an authentic master does not consider what the public says. He is not here to agree with someone. He is here to declare his truth, whether anybody agrees with it or not, it is immaterial. But that is the difficulty. Isan understood humbleness in a very wrong sense. His humbleness became a compromise. His humbleness became a fear. Otherwise, it was so clear that he should have told Kaiozan in the beginning that what you are talking about, Buddha's turning into dust. Only Buddhas don't turn into dust. They turn into a more cosmic consciousness. But because he did not say anything against Kaiozan, Kaiozan asked him, "How about you, being a humble person?" He could not say that I am also a Buddha. That's where Kaiozan was trying to drive him, to show him whether you are really humble or not. But humbleness does not mean to compromise with lies, to compromise with absurd hypotheses. Humbleness does not mean to have a friendliness towards lies. Humbleness is not a sheep. It has to be a lion. But because he was trying to create a different school from Matazu, he was caught into a difficulty. He could not shout, he could not hit, and all other things that from the times of Buddha masters used to do, he wanted to create something new and original, and he was not capable of it. He was a simple man, an humble man, but not very courageous. And humbleness needs more courage than anything else. To be nothing needs more guts than to be something. When he was asked, "How about you?" he should have said, "I am a Buddha. And no Buddha helps the wheel of life and death. And no Buddha turns into dust. And you are being absolutely absurd. Just because I am not Matazu and I am trying to create a new school, you know perfectly well I will not shout and I will not hit you. That does not mean that you can go on asking absurd questions. I can at least say to you without shouting, silently and peacefully and lovingly, that don't be stupid." But even that he could not manage. Kyozan pointed to a water bottle and said, "Please get in it." That's what I am saying, that don't agree with anything stupid, otherwise there is no way to turn back. Now he has accepted that Buddhas turn into dust. He has accepted that Buddhas turn the wheel of life and death. Kyozan is driving him more deeper. He says, "Now please get in this bottle. You are a Buddha." Isan's response was, "All the Buddhas by their occult powers are at present in the mouth of the bottle." Such stupid nonsense. All the Buddhas will choose a bottle in Isan's house, and they are all gathered in the neck of the bottle, so Isan cannot enter into it because it is blocked. Once you accept any absurdity, then there is no end. You will have to accept more absurdities. You will become more and more of a mess. And what all these Buddhas are doing there, turning the great wheel of the law in the bottle, even I would have hit him as hard as possible. I am a non-violent person. He is saying they are turning the wheel of the law. Can you see them doing it? Kyozan then said, "This is the turning of all the Buddhas. How will you turn it?" Isan observed, "It cannot be done if we are separated from the thing itself. at which Kyozan made his bows. Isan has not proved his mettle. Although his last statement is correct, that's why Kyozan made his bow. He has asked, how will you turn it? Isan observed, it cannot be done if we are separated from the thing itself. I am no more close to the wheel. I am still alive. I have not turned into a dust. That's why I am separate from the wheel. And I cannot turn it. But accepting the very idea that Buddhas turn into dust and then their work is only to turn the wheel of life and death is so strange and so against the very spirit of Zen that Isan needs good beating. If you meet him somewhere on my behalf, do a good job. Soseki wrote, virtue and compassion together make up each other's integrity. Nothing that comes through the gate from outside can be the family treasure. Throwing away the whole pile in your heart, with empty hands, you come bringing salvation. A beautiful poetry. And significant too. Virtue and compassion together make up each one's integrity. Compassion, in fact, is another name of virtue. All acts of virtue are acts of compassion. They are not two, only two words for the same quality. Nothing that comes through the gate from outside can be the family treasure. He is saying nothing that comes from the outside can be considered your treasure. Your treasure is already inside. It does not have to come from outside. Throwing away the whole pile that comes from outside in your heart, with empty hands you come bringing salvation. If you can throw away everything that comes from outside, your empty heart, your empty being is the greatest treasure which brings salvation to you. That's what we are doing in our meditations. our meditations are concentrated Zen in a very simple and joyful way, with a great playfulness, we are trying to find the treasure inside. There is no need to be serious about it, because it is there, just a little moving inwards, a single step in fact, and you have arrived at the home. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, these days when you say the word witness, it has the same impact that the words love or relationship once had. I listen as if it is actually food to nourish something vital inside. Is that the art of the master? To arouse appetites one never knew one had?" Yes, Manisha, the whole function of the master is to make you aware of your own thirst, of your own appetites, of your own longings that you have been avoiding to face. The whole art of the master is exactly to make you thirsty, hungry, to reach to your own being. Because except reaching to your own being, you will remain blind and you will remain in darkness and you will suffer birth and you will suffer death and you will suffer all that happens between these two. To take you beyond suffering, to allow you the freedom of the whole sky, to create an intense urgency, because one never knows. I may not be here tomorrow. You may not be here tomorrow. Tomorrow is so uncertain that one has to gather all his forces in this moment if he wants to do something. And reaching to your center is not something that can be postponed. Everything else can be postponed, but not your entering into your center, because that is the very purpose of life. That is the only goal worth anything. And it is your source. So if you make an intense effort to search for it, you are bound to find it. Nobody can miss being a Buddha. One can only postpone. You can postpone for tomorrow, for another life, but sooner or later, this century or other century, You cannot ultimately avoid coming into contact with your own nature. So why not do it now? But before you do it, because you may come back, you may not come back, Nivedana does not allow you to go too far. The moment he sees that now few people are going too far, immediately they are called back. And it is a very perfect time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh to have a good laugh, because who knows, one may come back to laugh again or not. So before entering in, have a good laugh. This laughter will help you to be lightweight. This laughter will make your meditation a joyful, a beautiful, non-serious playfulness. All the religions down the ages have made meditation a great seriousness, and I consider it as one of the misfortunes, because nobody wants to be serious. Life is making people serious enough, and on top of it, nobody wants to get into any serious trouble. But meditation is not serious. It is just one of the most easiest silent, a dancing towards your being. But anyway, first comes Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Bonjo, the Australian boundary rider, hangs up his saddle for the last time. "Come on, Bill," he says to his old faithful dog. "I have had enough of this. I am going to become a truck driver." Bonjo practices his driving skills for many days and finally goes for his truck driving test. "Now tell me," says the examiner, "what would you do if a kangaroo hopped in front of your truck?" "I would stop," replies Bonzo, "and shoo it away." "Good," says the examiner. "And supposing you ran over a prickly bear and got a puncture, what would you do?" "I would have a few beers, eat the prickly pear, change the wheel, and then carry on," replies Bonzo. "Good," says the instructor. "And one more question. Supposing you are driving along a two-lane highway and you see a truck coming towards you, At the same time, another truck is overtaking you, and then you see another truck overtaking the truck coming towards you. There is no chance of avoiding a huge collision. What would you do? Well, says Bonjo, smilingly, gleefully, then I would wake up Bill. Really? Says the examiner. Who is Bill? Bill is my dog, replies Bonjo. Really? Says the examiner. And what good would that do, waking up your dog? It would not do any good, replies Bonzo, but Bill loves to see a good smash. Gorgeous Gloria leaves the city one sunny morning for a drive in her little red Alfa Romeo sports car. She is speeding through the country lanes when suddenly there is a loud banging noise from the engine. Gloria pulls the car over to the side of the road and gets out. Obviously, the car is not going any further and it is getting late. So Gloria walks to a nearby farmhouse to explain her trouble. Old Zeb, the farmer, offers a room to Gloria and she sleeps there for the night. The next morning, Gloria wanders into the barn and watches Jeb's daughter milking a cow. That looks like fun, says Gloria. Can I try? Sure, replies the girl, getting up from the milking stool. Gloria sits down beside the cow, grabs its tits, and starts squeezing. A couple of minutes later, she asks the girl, hey, how long do you have to pull on these things before they get hard? Admiral Kowalski, the commander-in-chief of the Polak Navy, decides to make a snap inspection of the Polak fleet. So he takes a small seaplane with Captain Klifsky, the ace pilot, to fly to the naval harbor. While they are in the air, Rear Admiral Kowalski takes the controls of the plane and starts to guide the seaplane towards a nearby runway. Ahem, excuse me, sir, says Captain Klifsky, but this plane can only land on water, not on the ground. Ah, yes, silly me, says the old Polak sea dog, and he immediately turns the plane towards the harbor and makes a perfect touchdown on the water. As he gets out of his seat, Rear Admiral Kowalski turns to Captain Klifsky. I want to thank you, Captain, he says, for being so polite and tactful in telling me I was about to make a big mistake. You saved me from making a real fool of myself. Rear Admiral Kowalski then salutes smartly opens the door and steps out straight into the sea. Never know. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards, gathering all your consciousness, all your life energy, almost like a spear piercing towards the center of your being. It is a single step. All that you need is a great urgency. Deeper and deeper, remember at the center only the witness remains, just like a small flame of awareness. It seems as if the body is miles away. And the mind is even more far away. You are just a witness, and this witnessing makes you a Buddha. I don't teach Buddhism, I teach the Buddha. I don't want you to learn any philosophy, any teaching. I want you to know that you are Buddha himself. This moment, just witnessing, such a great silence has descended over you. Great fragrance of a new dimension. Flowers start showering. Just hold on to the center. To make it clear, Nivedana, Relax. Remain just a witness. That is the only quality that goes on with you eternally. That is your eternity. That is your real life. The body will go down to the earth. In you only one thing is immortal, and that is your witnessing quality. The evening was beautiful in itself. The presence of 10,000 Buddhas enjoying the splendor of witnessing has made it immensely great. I can see Buddha auditorium turning into a lake of consciousness. You are disappearing as a separate individual, relaxing into the cosmos without any ripples. Gather as much experience, because you have to bring the Buddha to your ordinary life. We are not the renouncers. We are the one who rejoice I want my Buddhas to be singing, to be dancing, to be loving, to be blossoming in all colors and all dimensions. The whole life is ours. There is nothing to abandon, but everything to be transformed, refined, made better. At this moment, you are the most fortunate people on the earth. You have to spread this cool fire around the globe. Only this cool fire can prevent this earth from destruction. And the time is very short, just 12 years. Either the life affirmating are going to win, or the life negative, life destructive are going to destroy. It has never been so urgent to be a Buddha as it is today. Vedana, come back, but come as a Buddha, with the same grace, with the same silence, with the same dance in the heart. Just sit down as nobody's. For a few moments to recollect the golden path that you have followed in going to your center, and you have come back from the same path again. The Buddha goes on coming closer and closer to your circumference. Soon he will become your circumference too. That day will be of great rejoicing.
Yes.